4 minutes after 8 o'clock. Welcome to the Morning Magazine for Thursday, May 25th. I'm Sam Fuqua, and for Shannon Young. Coming up this morning after the headlines, we hear a lot about how poor air quality in the metro area impacts physical health, but bad air is also hard on our mental health. We'll talk with a journalist who's been investigating that issue. Also, our regular Thursday visit with John Lendorf on Radio Nibbles. After the BBC headlines at 8:30, Tish Buford will speak with Nadine Bridges, the executive director of One Colorado, the statewide LGBTQ advocacy organization. And then every fourth Thursday at 9, it's our collaboration with the Boulder Bookstore, the Radio Book Club. This morning, local author Buzzy Jackson talks about her new novel. And our day of eclectic music begins at 9:30 with the Morning Sound Alternative. All that still ahead, all made possible by the listener members of KGNU. Thanks, members. We begin, as always, with state and local headlines. Here's Benita Lee.
Colorado Governor Jared Polis signed a tax relief plan Wednesday, which now will go on November's ballot as Proposition HH. If voters approve the measure, it would remove $50,000 off the taxable value of residential properties and lower tax rates down to 6.7% over a period of 10 years. Commercial and agricultural property tax rates would go down as well. According to a press release from the governor's office, the average homeowner will save about $1,000 over the next 2 years and over $3,000 over the next 5 years if Proposition HH passes. Senate Bill 303 was created to address rising housing costs, which have in turn raised property values and property taxes. A judge ruled in favor of environmental watchdogs who sued the state of Colorado for failing to protect waterways from factory farms. According to the Colorado Sun, Judge Matthew Norwood said Colorado's Water Quality Control Division violated state and federal law by issuing general operating permits to large livestock operations. But the division did not monitor the farm's water discharges to ensure they were following health department protocols. The plaintiffs included the Center for Biological Diversity and Food and Water Watch. The nonprofits said the ruling would hold the industry accountable for its pollution and protect Colorado rivers from high nitrogen and E. coli levels. A Douglas County School Board director announced her resignation Tuesday because she felt the district was not taking action against racism and discrimination. Elizabeth Hansen, who had been on the board since 2019, said there were, quote, egregious things happening in this district.
Jeremiah Gansey is not the only student in this district that has experienced disgusting acts of racism, of anti-Semitism, of homophobic and of transphobic acts.
Hansen referred in her resignation speech to how several district officials had denounced the alleged racism at Castle Rock Middle School. An eighth grader, Jeremiah Gansey, had reported being verbally attacked by fellow students with racial slurs, both in school and on social media. She also noted how dozens of principals in the district had asked the board in 2021 to not dismantle an equity policy that had been adopted the year before. According to Colorado Public Radio, Hansen also expressed concern about the board choosing to spend tax dollars to go to trial against former Superintendent Corey Wise. Wise was fired without cause in February 2022 after an alleged closed meeting between four majority board members. Wise sued, citing a breach against the Colorado Open Meetings Law.
I also can no longer look at our community, our taxpayers in the eyes and assure them that every dollar in our budget is being spent wisely.
Hansen said she hoped her resignation would create awareness in the community and lead to solutions. Broomfield officials voted Tuesday to close the First Bank Center in Broomfield. KGNU's Eli Kalin has more.
The Broomfield Renewal Authority Board of Directors said that the arena never made a profit since opening in 2006. The facility cost $45 million to build. It was financed by issuing almost $60 million in bonds. Less than half of the bonds have been paid back at this time. According to 9 News, the city is expected to demolish the event center sometime after it closes on November 30th of this year. The 6,500-seat venue was designed for sporting events and concerts. The First Bank Center is owned by the Broomfield Urban Renewal Authority, and the land that it sits on will likely be sold. For KGNU, I'm Eli Kalin.
Colorado Parks and Wildlife officials are reducing big game hunting licenses and shortening season dates to allow herds to recover their numbers after the severe winter. The Parks Departments will issue 12% fewer hunting licenses for deer, elk, pronghorn, moose, and bear. Snow conditions in the northwest corner of the state were the worst in 70 years, officials said. Heavy storms buried food for grazing animals like elk, pronghorn, and mule deer. Boulder County will conduct a 5-acre prescribed burn today at Hall Ranch to reduce woody debris that could lead to wildland fires. The county will close Hall Ranch all day and is asking residents to not call 911 if they see smoke and flames in the prescribed burn area over the next several days. Officials say they will stop burning if the weather creates unsafe conditions. Closure alerts are posted on the Boulder County Parks and Open Space Facebook and Twitter accounts. Denver International Airport is expecting over 400,000 passengers to travel through its checkpoints over the Memorial Day holiday weekend. A DIA press release says the increase in travelers is almost 10% higher compared with this time last year. The airport is recommending that passengers be inside the airport at least 2 hours before boarding time. A free remote bag check will be available for domestic flights on 75th Avenue near the Pikes Peak shuttle lot and at the transit center near the RTDA line. And to help ease the stress of holiday travel, the Canine Airport Therapy Squad will have more than 80 volunteer dogs available for friendly pats and selfies. The city of Boulder is reminding residents that June is Walk and Bike Month in Colorado. The city is teaming up with Community Cycles and other local partners to host free walks, bike rides, and related events. Boulder's Walk and Bike to Work Day will be held on June 28th. People who sign up for the event are eligible to win prizes. Other events include a bike show, a slow marathon, and the annual Bike to Work Day happy hour. For details, go to the City of Boulder's website. Thunderstorms and high-altitude winds yesterday cleared the heavy smoke caught above the Front Range. This morning, you can expect sunny skies and good air quality with increasing clouds and some scattered thunderstorms this afternoon. Today's high is near 75 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Benita Lee.
Twelve minutes after 8 at listener-supported KGNU, and yes, it is a beautiful, clear morning here in Boulder, which comes as a relief after all the smoke from the huge wildfires up in Alberta inundated much of the Front Range. Last Friday, Denver had the worst air quality in the world, and for most of the week, it continued to rank in the top 10 to 20 worst cities worldwide for air quality. Even on good days, Denver and the Front Range has some of the worst air quality in the nation, especially when it comes to the type of pollutants that aren't as visible, like ground-level ozone. KGNU's Alexis Kenyon spoke with Jim Robbins. He's a Montana-based reporter who writes about science and the environment for the New York Times and Kaiser Health News. He says for the first time, researchers are beginning to pinpoint evidence about how bad air quality can alter our mental health.
You know, mental health is part of the problem. But, you know, a few years ago, I started writing about air pollution and looking into ozone. And ozone is it's a colorless, odorless gas that is similar to chlorine, a little different. But it comes from the combustion of air pollution from automobiles and oil and gas development. And Denver has the highest levels of ozone pollution in the country. And as I looked into ozone, I realized, wow, this is a much more serious problem than I thought. They call ozone the invisible pollutant because you can't see it, smell it, or taste it. And so people aren't really aware that it's there, but it's something you really should pay attention to, especially children and especially older adults, because it can really tax your respiratory system, your heart, and now we know your brain. Ozone also affects the brain. There's two particles categories that cause physical problems. What turns out to be the real baddie, or the bad guy in all this, are the ultrafine particles that come from school buses, diesel exhaust from trucks, dust, soot. There's just a whole host of ultrafine particles. And those are the ones that get not only into your lungs, your respiratory system, but that also get into your brain. They get breathed through the nose has been called the front door of the brain, because there's a direct pipeline that goes from your nose up to the olfactory bulb. And these particles carry with them heavy metals that are attached to the pollution. They get into the neurons and they damage the neurons. So let's take the amygdala. So the amygdala is an almond-shaped part of the brain that governs your fear response. And so if it's damaged, or the prefrontal cortex or the hippocampus are damaged by these ultrafine particles, they can't carry out their full load of responsibilities. And so this is the theory that these particles damage those parts of the brain. They're not robust any longer. And people have trouble with anxiety and depression because of this impinging on the function.
Okay. So to recap, the theory is these ultrafine particles, when you breathe them in, they're shot directly to your brain, and they can begin to damage the parts of your brain that determine how you essentially feel about the world. So, for example, with the amygdala, which governs your fear response, you may begin to feel fear differently, which would explain anxiety or a change in your anxiety levels.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so there's two theories about how particles damage the brain. One is that they directly damage these areas that I talked about, the amygdala. The prefrontal cortex is really an important organ. It's about the size of a half of an avocado, and it's on the left side. It's the left prefrontal cortex, and they call it the organ of civilization. The reason they call it that is because it's responsible for integrating your conscious thoughts, your cognitive skills, your thinking, with your emotions, your feelings. And so if you're properly regulated, your prefrontal cortex is allowing you to express yourself properly, appropriately, as far as your emotions, how you feel about things, and so on. But if its function is impaired, there's direct impacts from these ultrafine particles, especially on neural function. So you take a whiff of diesel smoke, it goes into your brain, and it impairs the function of a region, like the prefrontal cortex. The other theory about how the mechanism of this is that it causes an inflammation in the brain. So your brain reacts, it fights off this quote unquote infection of air pollution, and it stays on alert because it's always there and it's always fighting it off. And that chronic kind of inflammation is another theory about how brain function is reduced by air pollution. And it might not be one or the other, it might be both of those things. Again, this area has a lot of research, enough to say this is real, but the particulars of it are still being researched and still being understood. So,
how would you say people should weigh the risk of, the mental health boost they get from exercising outside and the physical boost versus the, potential damage of breathing in bad air?
That's a really good question. And I've talked to experts and say they're not really sure what the trade-offs are. You're not getting exercise. I would guess that you might at least lower your exposure by not exercising as much or exercising indoors. And then there are times of the day when these levels are lower. But maybe early in the morning, before the traffic is out, or after the traffic is out, before it gets too warm, you could get out and do a run. I would definitely time my exercise according to when light levels were the lowest. The other thing would be to not exercise anywhere where there's a lot of traffic. And to get out in the hills. I mean, you're always going to have some exposure. I mean, if you get up above the pollution, that would help hiking. But in Denver itself, or of the major metropolitan areas along the Front Range, you're going to have high levels of pollution most of the time, especially in the summer.
Before I let you go, is there anything that I missed that you want to add or you think people would like to know?
I would say the best defense against this kind of a thing is to be mindful of that this is happening. This is real. Denver is under a lot of pressure to fix this because of the EPA has classified the Front Range as a serious violation. It's one of the highest in the country, and it's well above standards. And there is a movement out there to say the standards aren't low enough. In fact, a lot of the research I've done, a common theme is these standards are too high. So even though these standards are not being met now by the Front Range, the standards, by some arguments, including the World Health Organization, these standards should be much lower.
And just to clarify, because this could be confusing, by lower standards, you mean lower levels of pollution, lower levels of ozone emissions.
Right. I don't remember the numbers off of my head, but it's substantial. And so people should become conversant, at least, in what's going on with pollutants and how much at risk they are, especially children and older adults. And there's things that can be done, particularly reining in the oil and gas industry and some of the emissions there. Yeah. There's a lot of people looking into this issue these days and seeing it as one of the major factors in childhood development. You know, I've been surprised at a little the progressive state, like Colorado, has given free rein to a lot of the oil and gas industry. People have these things in their backyard, you know, and they emit a lot of air pollution. So, you know, there's some people need to kind of come up to speed on what's going on and all that kind of a thing, because it's a much more serious health threat. Human health threat than I imagined when I first started writing about air pollution.
Jim Robbins is a freelance journalist based in Helena, Montana, who writes about the environment and science for publications like the New York Times and Kaiser Health News. Jim, thank you so much for talking with me. I appreciate it.
All right, Alexis. Sounds good. Make me sound smart.
For KGNU, I'm Alexis Kenyon.
Care to hear some tunes? Then join us every Thursday from 8 to 9 p.m. to hear Ragtime America. Ragtime America is the only show of its kind between the Mississippi River and the Pacific Coast, where you'll listen to ragtime and related music from the classics of the past up to the contemporary music of today. So make sure to join us every Thursday from 8 to 9 p.m. on KGNU.
Everybody eats when they come to my house. I fix your favorite dishes.
Kelb Calloway takes us into Radio Nibbles, our regular Thursday morning conversation with John Lendorf. Hey, good to see you.
Good to see you, Sam. For listeners who may not be aware, Sam and I originated Radio Nibbles back before the turn of the century.
Yes, in the 1900s we did that, I think.
Yes, back in the 1900s. We just kind of banged rocks together and communicated that way. Welcome to Radio Nibbles. I hope you have your big steaming cup of chai and you're sitting outside, because finally, we have a blue sky. And that's a beautiful thing, and that's why we're welcoming in Chef Dakota Seufer, who's here. He's the chef and owner of Cafe Aeon up on the hill. He's been our guest before, and welcome back.
Hi, good morning. Great to be here.
How's life up on the hill?
Yeah, it's getting a little exciting. Just got through graduation, Mother's Day. Of course, it was raining and disgusting all week.
Of course.
Which is the only way to welcome in families from California. But Otherwise, yeah, there's some dust flying up there with two hotels and the convention center being built across the street from each other, which we're excited about.
I have a trick question for you. You've been in business how long in Boulder?
13 years.
So are we back to normal now? That's a trick question.
Post-pandemic wise? It feels pretty close, yeah. Other than you still have to scan a menu to look at it some places, which drives me nuts.
Oh, good. I was going to mention that.
But yeah, I would say it feels like it. You know, I love being able to eat outside. It's nice to see that you have more options for that.
Speaking of outside, one of the things we want to celebrate right now is that the first paella ever has gone into space. It went up to the space station there on a private trip. Chef Andres made it. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah. No, it's a great step for rice around the world to be seen. That far away. But no, I think it's cool. I mean, every now and then I'll poke around the grocery store aisles and see what's out there for rice. And there's some pretty fun, shelf-stable, you know, quick or instant rice dishes. It seems like Indian food and curries have, I think I've mentioned risotto as well, is at the forefront of instant rice dishes. But maybe there is room for paella to be more convenient. I don't know how I feel about that, but it could be interesting.
Certainly better than what they ate in space when I was a kid.
The freeze-dried ice cream.
And speaking of, let's tell people a little bit what paella is as I dig into some of the paella that you brought us.
Oh, man. You made this paella?
Yeah.
Thank you, Dakota.
So paella, traditional Spanish rice dish. I think the way back when's are some Roman soldiers were marching around with their large round shields. They'd carry a little bag of rice, a few threads of saffron, start a fire, flip the shield over, put the rice in there, maybe catch a rabbit, throw that in there as well. Throw your threads of saffron, whatever seasoning, and...
And the studio smells like saffron right now. Yeah. Pretty nice change of pace, Samuel.
And a little egg for some protein
breakfast
and
paella.
Contrast.
Yeah.
Well, you used to serve breakfast paella when you had a farmer's.
Yeah, when we did the farmer's market, kind of needed to figure out a way to do something for the first few hours rather than just standing around. So we threw an egg on it. People enjoyed it.
And I infer from your previous comment that you really don't want to rush paella. It's like a slow food.
So very similar to risotto in that it's a grain of a type of rice that's absorbs a lot of liquid. The main difference, one of the main differences is risotto, you're stirring, releasing all these starches. It becomes so creamy and delicious. Paella, you're not stirring. Those starches fall to the bottom of the pan and slowly crisp and create the really delicious sucrot, which is like that.
So the crunchy stuff on the bottom actually has a name.
Yeah, yep, sucrot. But yeah, it does take about 40, 45 minutes.
Hey, let's talk a little bit about what you have planned for the summer. Obviously, fun and food at Cafe Aeon. But... you have some farm dinners planned.
Yeah. I'm really excited. I was asked to cook alongside with the team at Meadowlark Farm Dinners, which I helped out on their first season about 14 or 15 years ago, and was the chef for a year after that, and then went on an open Cafe Aeon and would help out here and there. The business has since changed hands, and really exciting new owner, young female Lena, is the head of it, but it's still a school bus that has been outfitted as a commercial kitchen. They pull behind it an 8-foot wood-fired grill and a small truck that carries all of the tables, chairs, tents, beautiful white tablecloths are set up.
So it's at Metalark? The dinner.
The business is called Metalark, and it travels around Boulder County to a variety of different farms.
So where will people find the dinners?
Speedwell Farm, very Aspen cool. Moon, Lions Farmette, Cure Farm, and I'm sure there'll be more.
Cool.
Really neat thing to try if you haven't a farm dinner.
Amazing. This is a great time, perfect date night. Wine is offered as well.
I really think it's an incredible opportunity to really, you know, it's different than going to a farm stand or a market, you know.
We're almost out of time. John, any final thoughts? We got about 45 seconds.
I hope everyone looks at Nibbles in the Boulder Weekly. Have a story about serious food adventures you can have this summer in Colorado. I hope you'll join us next week because we have our hour-long kitchen table talk.
Well, Dakota, thanks so much for the paella this morning, and Cafe Aeon sounds like it's going strong on the hill. With all the changes,
you.
Riding the wave.
Absolutely. Right.
Good to see you, and thank you, John. It's wonderful to see you again.
Sam, a genuine pleasure.
8:30 at listener-supported KGNU. Stay tuned for the BBC headlines.